Hello, I'm Sam Clement, and welcome to this special edition of the Picture House podcast with John Krasinski, the co-writer, the director, and the star of A Quiet Place, which is in cinemas now, and I thoroughly enjoyed. Please do see it on a big cinema screen with good surround sound. Very important. Also, not a film to take in noisy snacks to. Marshmallows and a soft white bread with the crust cut off is the appropriate form of snackage for this film. John Krasinski, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for talking to me.
Really looking forward to playing A Quiet Place in our theatres.
I can't wait. I can't wait for you guys to see it.
It's a really cinematic film. When I was watching it, I was just thinking, like, this is the way to enjoy this film.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much. I agree. I totally agree. I think if you're discussing the theater experience, you know, I think every director probably prefers every audience to see it in the theater. That's the age-old thing, right? Because that's sort of how you designed it to be. And yet this one, as much as you want people to see it in the theater, there's only so much a director can say. You know, it's really the audiences that speak for themselves. And I will say one of the best compliments I've ever gotten on the movie is these audiences saying you have to see it in the theater because it's not just a movie, it's an experience. I mean, that's as cool as it gets. I did not expect kind words like that, but it is true. I think that there's something really exciting and fun about having to remain quiet with your fellow audience members because you actually have to live by the same rules as the family, because when we take sound out of the movie, you're living in silence as much as the family is.
Absolutely. I was wondering, when you were working on the screenplay, were you sort of imagining that audio experience as well, how the sound would play between scenes?
Absolutely. I mean, we knew that sound would be a massive character, if not the main character. And so, but I don't think I knew the potential of it. I knew that it would be really cool, but I also thought it would be a high wire act. You know, it's one of those things, if you make it to the other side, it's fantastic. If you don't, it's literally the worst possible outcome. And I think that there were so many moments that I started to realize how special what we had was, one of which was just this idea of, again, it's not a silent film, it's a quiet film. And so when you're using sound, you know, to have an ambient sound completely surround the audience with all these different speakers, and if you're lucky enough to see it in a Dolby or Atmos or anything like that, it's fantastic. It becomes this experience where I was blown away. I think if you asked me to name 10 sounds that the forest makes, I'd name two. And then that day that we were shooting in the forest, of just a family walking along a sand path in the forest, I was blown away by how much our sound guys were recording and what we were getting out of it. It was so beautiful. There was something really kind of existential about it. So yes, we always knew that it would become a huge character. What I didn't realize and what I meant by the potential is, when we got into the sound mix, the idea of pulling sound out and when you can play with perspective. So what I mean by that is, when you have a close up on something, you can hear the sound. When you pull back to a medium shot or a wide shot, you can't hear that same exact sound. Stuff like that was so much fun to play with. And I just had the greatest team in Ethan and Eric and Brandon, our sound mixer. It was just the most amazing experience. I had so much fun.
In the edit, when you started to do the sound work, it must have been sort of like a fourth dimension or
it really was.
Really changing the film.
Well, it was funny because I was talking about budget and the fact that we had a small budget and not a lot of time to do this. We wrapped on November 1st and the movie will come out on April 6th. And this is obviously a very sound mix heavy and a very visual effects heavy movie. So it was extremely stressful, and yet one of the bonuses of being under the gun like that was, I think if we had had 6 or 8 more weeks, I might have gone actually insane in the sound mix, because there's so much you can do. And I think I would have fallen through the looking glass and gone to some place very weird.
I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah, I'm back.
What I noticed when I was watching the film is there were a few people in there with snacks and drinks.
But yeah,
you made the cinema audience so considerate to their fellow cinema patrons.
Yeah.
No other director has done this.
I know. Hey, I'll take it. That's one of the great mantles I'm willing to carry. But I think the reverse of that, too, is I was just saying that it's very funny to me that people now identify the sound makers. It sounds like a Willy Wonka character, but the sound makers, I mean, we just had a screening in New York, and as I was talking to people afterwards, in the middle of talking, they'd go, there he is. There's the guy who ate popcorn the whole way through. And I was like, oh my God, we're turning this into some like weird witch hunt. But it's a really fun experience that way. And I think that there is something really fun about it being communal. And I remember Rob Marshall, who directed Mary Poppins and Into the Woods with Emily, who's one of the most phenomenal human beings you'll ever meet. He said that Nora Ephron told him, wouldn't it be great if we could actually watch our own movies? Meaning, as a director, you see only the mistakes and you'll never experience that. And I will say, to the whole point that we're talking about, South by Southwest, the greatest gift that audience gave me was I actually saw my movie for the first time, because I had seen it probably 300 times before that. But to watch it with an audience and have within, you know, 70 seconds, people went dead quiet. And then they were gasping when things got tense. And then they were screaming no at the screen. And then at the end of the movie, they jumped up and cheered. There's no greater experience. I don't know if I'll have a better experience in my career.
That sounds wild.
It's really wild. Yeah.
I wanted to ask, as well as the sound design, there is some amazing effects in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But on set, do you have a sort of a stand-in for the creature for the actors to work with? Because the there's a lot of face acting in this film.
Yes.
Lots of good eye acting. And yes. I wonder if there's anything there to work against.
We did. We had ILM, who's the greatest group of people, some of the greatest people I've ever met in my life, let alone my career. They were so unbelievably amazing and helpful. And obviously, I had never done this before. I had a ton of ideas, but they walked me through it and it became sort of a dance partner with me. It was amazing. But they had a guy in a mocap suit, a motion capture suit, that would be there for eyeline, there for performance, things like that. And then I don't know when it happened, but it slowly transitioned that I put the motion capture suit on. And so I became the creature for the last few scenes, which were the biggest dramatic scenes for the creature. And the crazy part about that is we had a test audience, only one test audience ever, because the schedule was so short. And the weirdest experience that I don't want to relive ever again, though it was kind of funny, is in the middle of a very scary scene, all of a sudden a van sneaker came into the shot, and then the camera slowly pans up my legs into my arms and then to my beard as I fake screamed as the creature. It was not the best reaction from the crowd to have hilarity ensue instead of genuine fear.
Sounds like a great DVD extra.
Yes. Oh my God. I don't know if I'm strong enough as a person to let that out into the world.
I love the creature design in this film, and not wanting to talk about it too much on the podcast, but just in terms of coming up with that idea, is that something that you sketch out whilst writing the script? Do you go to ILM with, I don't know, some like pencil drawings or
not only do I have pencil, yeah, I had written all these ideas, I had sketched a few things and talked about it ad nauseum with my amazing production designer, Jeff Beecroft. And then when ILM came in, I actually even got on the floor and showed how I wanted him to crawl on video. They have that somewhere. Hopefully that doesn't come out anytime soon. But it's one of those things where a movie like this is all about the details and it's all about the rules. And so I wanted the creature to adhere to similar rules. I didn't want the family to live through this very rigorous set of rules that can't be broken, because they're living through this brilliant sort of puzzle box kind of life, that I wanted the creature to do that too. So what I mean by that is we just talked about evolutionary aspects of the creature. How would he have evolved? So he comes from some different place or planet where humans obviously aren't. And so he's evolved as a perfect killing machine, right? And so this idea of, if there was no light on his planet, he doesn't need eyes. And so he hunts purely by sound. That's why he did it. And those big sort of rules started opening up all these possibilities of what he was and why he was. And it was one of the most fun things ever. I remember one of the best bits of advice my father ever gave me was, you know, the most confident thing you can say as a person is, I don't know. And so I had all these ideas, but when I met the amazing Scott Farrar at ILM, who's just the most brilliant man, I said to him, here are all my ideas, but I've never done this before. I don't know what I'm doing, so help me, let's do it together. Consequently, ILM has said this is one of their favorite movies they've ever done, and I think it's because they had a hand in it from the beginning. They really kind of felt like this was their baby with me. We sort of birthed this thing together, and they absolutely love it. It's been an absolute blast working with them.
I think one of the reasons maybe people are so invested in audiences especially is you do lay out the rules.
Yeah.
I love films with a good set of rules.
Yeah, right? It's weird. It's true.
It's crazy watching a film where people could just make stuff up.
It's like, true, oh, yeah. Okay. It's like one of my favorite movies was David Fincher's movie, The Game, and I just remember watching it again and going back and saying, there's got to be a way that this doesn't make sense, and for me at least, I loved it. I absolutely loved that he adhered to all that stuff.
Is that something that when you're writing, you're sort of, do you start working on a separate sort of document for rules, or like a bit like how the character has in the basement, all the cuttings?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it was the best benefit in getting to rewrite the script. And the reason why I was so adamant about being able to rewrite the script, because I was rewriting it to direct. That's a huge bonus to get. So I was writing rules into the margin. I was writing them into the stage directions. I was actually writing my shots of how I was going to shoot everything into the script. So it became that thing of absolutely you're aware of it. The funny thing is you keep having ideas. So it started with the sand paths. Then it was the communicating with different color lights. So red means bad, run, and white means you're safe. And things like that where you start drilling down. And then when you have another idea, you have to go back and rewrite the entire script to make sure that they all follow. Because it was one of those things where I was always conscious of the fact that if you broke one of the rules or if someone said, well, she's walking on painted spots, that doesn't make sense. And then you later say, oh, it does make sense. I totally get it now. That I was very aware that if you broke one of the rules, you'd start to lose the audience.
I guess also because of the nature of the film, there's a lot of showing rather than telling.
Exactly,
it's not like someone just reads out a list at the beginning.
Right.
Which must be quite a challenge. But again, for the audience to work out what's going on is great. You've got a great kind of pre-credit scene where everything is sort of laid out just enough for the audience to be invested.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, it's funny. One of the best bits of advice I got was actually from a marketing guy of a movie I did earlier called Promised Land, where he said the biggest misconception in the Hollywood, in the film business, is that audiences are stupid. They are most certainly not stupid. They want a challenge. They want to go through something where they have to do a lot of the work. You know, it's obviously a fine balance. You don't want to get to the place where you're frustrating people. But certainly at the beginning of our movie, my intention was to lay out clues that you could put together, but just keep them as clues rather than exposition. And I think the one thing that's really fun about that is the clues that I lay out are only when our characters see them. Mm-hmm. So it was a conscious decision from the very beginning that I didn't want the audience to have more information than the family. This family doesn't really know what's going on. They're just trying to survive. They haven't been able to figure out what's going on in the rest of the world. So they have a very limited amount of information. So if you had more information than them, it would kind of blow the whole thing wide open. And if they had more information than you, that would just be frustrating. So it's really fun that the clues are really in the production design. There are things that are on the wall. There are things that are on the ground. There are things that we touch. There are things we don't touch. There's all these little clues and hints of what's going on that I really love that you go through it with the family.
There's a lot of really fun stuff in the background, and I can't wait to see the film again.
Oh,
just
thanks.
To sort of spot, because, you know, the character is so well drawn as a planner. I reckon it will reward repeat viewings.
Oh, I hope so. That'd be great.
I just wanted to say, the film looks amazing. You've got an amazing DOP in Charlotte.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who's shot films like The Hunt, which is one of my favorite films.
It's such a good film, isn't it?
How did she come on board?
Well, she had worked with Emily on Girl on the Train. So that's where I had met her. And she and Emily had a great experience there. I think Charlotte is a very refreshing, very different type of DP. And the way she shoots is very different from what I was experiencing in sort of American cinema. She was breaking the rules with Girl on the Train. And then, of course, I had loved movies like The Hunt, which is very different and very beautiful in a different way. But also I loved, for this movie especially, was Far From the Madding Crowd. I think that movie was able to capture landscape and wilderness and the experience of how they were living in such a beautiful way that I thought if you sort of transpose that beauty into the level of fear that this family's feeling, it would be a really nice juxtaposition. And it worked really, really well. I think that there was... It's also someone that I could talk to about landscape movies, about, you know, Terrence Malick movies like Days of Heaven or Thin Red Line, and she saw exactly what I was going for. I think if you pitch a horror movie and say, it's like a Terrence Malick horror movie, people are like, what? But she got it. She totally understood what it was.
That's something to put on the poster.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's got this really great earthy look to it, and it feels lived in, which is really nice.
Awesome.
And I think that's what Charlotte brings, maybe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. She's got an amazing eye, and she did such a beautiful job.
It must be something to sort of, when you're on screen, to have someone you trust behind the camera like that.
Yeah, I mean, I had an entire crew of people I trusted. I mean, it was one of those rare experiences where I got to have the production designer behind the monitors. I had my amazing team, my production company, Allison and Alexa, were there. The producers at Platinum Dunes were there behind the monitors. So you have people. This was really one of those family experiences where it didn't feel like we were making a movie. It sounds trite, but it's true. It felt like we were all at summer camp. So it felt like when I went in front of the camera to act, I had people who didn't do this for a job. They were living it. They were really living and breathing this experience. And so I trusted them implicitly.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for
Absolutely.
Talking to us, John.
Thank you.
I can't wait to get the movie in our theaters.
I can't wait.
And very quiet auditoriums.
Exactly. Thank, cool. you thank you very much.
Listening to the Picture House podcast, a Picture House's production brought to you by Picture House Cinemas. We would like to thank everyone who works at Picture House Cinemas and everyone who has ever attended a screening of a film at a Picture House cinema. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.